Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 89 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we talk with Maureen Quindy and Steve Gardner of the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization to learn about their organization's efforts with virtual conferences. Before we do that, we want to first take a moment to thank Castle, our sponsor for the second quarter of 2017. Castle is an accomplished full-services certification and licensure testing company that also offers its clients a variety of learning solutions capabilities. With an expert team of testing and instructional design professionals and a 30-year history of excellence in its field, Castle understands what it takes to develop and deliver quality learning and certification programs. To find out more about Castle's custom learning solutions, go to leadinglearning.com/castle.
Related to this episode interview with Maureen and Steve, we want to highlight the Tagoras Report on Association Virtual Events. This is a free report, and in it we draw on data from more than 100 associations to help you understand the emerging role of virtual events in the association sector. If you're considering a virtual conference or another virtual event, then you're on the verge of making a significant investment. And this report, Association Virtual Events, will help you learn fast and get on the road to success. To get the report, which again is free, go to tagoras.com/virtual-events.
And so, Salisa, you got to talk in depth with Steve and Maureen about their virtual events. And if I remember correctly, they've been doing virtual conferences for quite a while now. So what did you cover?
Well, you're right. You do remember correctly. They have been doing virtual conferences for 5 years now. And given that they have that depth of experience, we talk about what first got them initially into virtual conferences, what prompted them to undertake that format. We also then talked about what has evolved over those 5 years. What aspects have they left the same? Which ones have they changed? Of course, we talked about why any changes were made. And then we also just talked a little bit about the format itself and kind of inherent benefits and potential difficulties to overcome in the format.
Well, we're definitely bullish on virtual events. We've tried one ourselves with learning technology design this year, and it felt like, you know, we had a great experience with it, learned a lot. It's great to be hearing from folks like Steve and Maureen who have been doing it for a while and really have some deep experience to share. And, you know, I'm hoping this episode is going to inspire some organizations who haven't ventured into the virtual events world yet to make it part of their portfolio going forward, at least to give it a good try. So really looking forward to this. Let's go ahead and roll the interview with Steve and Maureen.
Hello, and welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Maureen Quindy and Steve Gardner, both of the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization. Maureen is the Director of E-Learning at NHPCO, and Steve is the Director of Education there. Maureen and Steve, thanks for taking time for the Leading Learning Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Maureen, would you start us off by sharing a bit about the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, your mission, and who you serve?
NHPCO, which is a National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, was founded in 1978, and we are the largest nonprofit membership organization representing hospice and palliative care programs and professionals in the United States. NHPCO is committed to providing and improving end-of-life care and expanding access to hospice care with the goal of profoundly enhancing quality of life for people dying in America and their loved ones. Our mission is to lead and mobilize social change for improved care at the end of life. And our vision is a world where individuals and families facing serious illness, death, and grief will experience the best that humankind can offer. NHPCO believes in service, respect, excellence, collaboration, and stewardship. Service in engaging customers, respect in honoring others, excellence in exceeding expectations, collaboration in fostering partnerships, and stewardship in managing resources. So those are our values. And our NHPCO headquarters are in Alexandria, Virginia.
Well, great. So it's an old organization doing important work here. And I'm especially interested in digging into NHPCO's experience with virtual conferences with the two of you. But before we do that, I think it would be helpful to know what else NHPCO does in terms of education. So Steve, could you give us kind of a snapshot view of what your portfolio looks like in terms of educational offerings, certifications, events, et cetera?
Sure. We offer 24 webinars a year. We provide two a month. We have over 100 asynchronous online courses available. We offer also about a dozen synchronous instructor-led courses, which are approximately 6 weeks long each. And then we have two in-person national conferences annually, one a clinical conference and one a management leadership conference. And we offer between one to two virtual conferences a year. We've done so for the past 5 years. And we offer a number of manager and executive leadership programs and collaborate with other organizations on a variety of special educational projects that are really just sort of pop up. And finally, NHPCO is accredited to provide continuing education credit to counselors, nurses, physicians, and social workers. So that's sort of a thumbnail of what we do in the education team.
Well, yeah, so it sounds like you've got a lot going on. And then, as you mentioned, you've added virtual conferences to that mix starting about 5 years ago. And so, Maureen, will you talk a little bit about the main drivers that led you to try that format, to say, okay, let's add virtual conferences to the range of the webinars and the asynchronous courses and the instructor-led courses and the conferences that were place-based that you were already offering?
Sure. We had various reasons for considering a virtual conference. We used to have an on-site conference and noticed a decline in conference attendance. We were not meeting our goals in attendance. Also, there was increasing cost of hosting in-person conferences, and with a decline in attendance, we were losing money. We conducted a member needs assessment, and the feedback that we got from our members indicated interest in having a virtual conference. We also thought of trying something new, something innovative, something fun from what we were currently doing. A cost-effective approach for participants at NHPCO would actually be something we thought would be interesting. So for many years, we have experience with webinars and webcasts for our educational programs, which was successful, cost-effective, and our members were comfortable with technology. So participating online using virtual conference technology wouldn't be a problem to our members. So having a virtual conference site allows multiple participants at no additional cost versus, you know, an on-site conference, reaching thousands versus hundreds, and this depends on your field or industry. For example, in our 2012 conference, in one of our sessions, we had about 1,500 attendees, which is not what we would have, you know, with our on-site conference that was just declining in attendance. So expanding reach to participants who typically could not travel to national meetings was also one of the reasons, those who did not have the budget for travel. So all of these things, you know, all of these reasons gave us, made us decide to give a virtual conference a shot.
Well, yeah, and I like especially that you took the time to do the member needs assessment and to ask specifically about whether this might be a format, and so you had that as evidence of yes, this could be worth trying out, and you've stuck with the format for a number of years. And so, Steve, could you share a little bit about the evolution of the virtual conferences? You know, what have you kind of kept the same from that very first one in 2012 until now? And what have you tweaked or changed over time?
Sure. Well, you know, starting out a little over 5 years ago in the planning stages of this, we really evaluated what resources and support we would need to pull off a virtual conference for the first time. Again, using the webinars is sort of a historical basis for us in our needs assessment. We just really dived right into this. We first, though, identified a partner that could really provide all the technical support and expertise that we didn't have on staff. And this was probably one of the most important decisions we made, since the success of the conference depends on the delivery of the content electronically. We also created a business plan and a budget that made sense for us, and we really approach the planning of the virtual conference very much the same way we do for an in-person conference. We pulled together content experts to serve on a planning committee. We sought their input along the way as we designed sort of the format, the framework. Our first virtual conference was a 5-day event, and we really had to consider, being on the Eastern time zone, you know, how should we really start the day and end the day to make sure it was going to work for everyone across the country. So we decided to start in the afternoon and end no later than 6 p.m. to really make it a reasonable hour for learners on the West Coast and, of course, learners in Hawaii and Alaska, where we have constituents, and we certainly wanted to be respectful of the fact that they're getting up at 6 a.m. to participate in a conference. And believe it or not, they did. So with that, we designed two different types of formats. We have plenary sessions, which are live streaming out of NHPCO's Alexandria office. And then we have concurrent sessions, which are webinar-based using PowerPoint and audio through the computer speakers. And once we really developed that program, you know, we did a few things differently than you would an in-person conference. We have a faculty training that really shares with them what the format is like and what the expectations are and what's different than being face-to-face with your audience. We also provided training for participants who were interested to make sure that they could technologically meet the requirements to have a successful experience. And both of those trainings were recorded and placed on our website so they could be viewed at any time. So we've kept all of those basics that I've just mentioned, the faculty training. We found that doing that earlier is better in the process because it gives the faculty time to think about their PowerPoint slides in a different way, knowing that they're going to be using some technology to hopefully engage the audience. We also provide 3 months of access to all of the content after the conference is over. So that's another real advantage to having a virtual conference. And we have a video library where we really assemble all kinds of resources and tools, and primarily video, some audio, which are sort of going to build on what we are presenting in our content. A couple of things are different, though. I mean, based on the theme of your conference and the content, you really can decide how many days you might want to do this. And we've offered over the years now between, you know, a 2-day conference, a 3-day conference, and a 5-day as we started out. We haven't gone back to a 5-day. We found that to be a bit rigorous and taxing. Mm-hmm. So a 2 to 3 day time frame is really our sweet spot. And keeping in mind, those are really half days when you're looking at the time frames that you're dealing with. And in the beginning, we offered a virtual exhibit hall, and we had a silent auction. We had a lot of things going on, and we didn't really garner the high levels of interest in some of those extras. So we pared them back a little bit, and we've added a few things, too. We've come up with academic poster sessions as additional resources, and these are access to the website, and they really provide great content outside of our webinar and plenary sessions. And I would say another thing that's changed is, because of the popularity of the live streaming, we've gone from having one of those a day to having 2 a day. We start the day with a live streaming, and we end the day with a live streaming. And we found that that really is a nice balance with the webinar format. And one of the things we found in our participant feedback is that we were providing 30-minute breaks between sessions, but the feedback said that was too much time, it was downtime, so they really, based on that, we went to a 15-minute break, and that seems to be working well. But we really are always paying attention to those evaluations that we get back and tweaking our program, or whether it's the content or just the format, to really give the best learning experience possible. So those have been some of the things we've done over the years.
That's great. Thanks, Steve, for sharing some of the tweaks and changes you've made over the years and some of the rationale for that. Because you mentioned the fact that you based some of those changes on feedback, would you talk a little bit about evaluations and what maybe what level of response rate you're getting from those? Because obviously you must feel confident enough that you're getting a good level of response to make changes based on that feedback.
Exactly, and that's the key. And one of the requirements we have for continuing education credit for the nurses, physicians, counselors, and social workers, and others that might just want the certificate, is that they must complete an evaluation. So that really helps us get the feedback that we need. We're looking at probably 40 to 50% of all participants are seeking some form of credit. And then on top of that, we are always asking and suggesting that people give us that feedback on a daily basis or after the conference is over. So it really gives us valuable feedback to really summarize. Then we can make comparisons from year to year and look at trends, and really helps us make those decisions to improve the program.
Well, great. Now, I know that there's this issue of cannibalization that often gets brought up when people are considering whether to make the move to a virtual conference. And so, Maureen, was that ever a concern for NHPCO? Were you worried about it negatively impacting attendance at any of your place-based conferences?
We certainly thought about this issue when we first started offering virtual conferences, and we wanted to make sure that the virtual conference content was unique from that of our in-person conferences. So our experiences has not been one in which a virtual conference has negatively impacted in-person conferences, but I think you have to strategically determine the content and dates of your virtual conference to ensure it doesn't compete or clash with others that you may offer in person.
Great. So you've sort of tried to balance it so that it really does feel like not a substitution to anything you already had in your portfolio, but an addition, a complement to what was already there.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about what might be the innate advantages and disadvantages of the virtual conference format. Steve, do you believe that there are sort of innate pros and cons to the format? And if yes, can you talk a little bit about some of those pros and cons of the virtual conference format?
Yeah, I think there's some of both. Just with anything, some pros for us, as Maureen mentioned earlier, we have been able to reach a much wider audience with our virtual conferences, able to reach people who couldn't afford to come to an on-site conference. And by having a registration fee associated with an organization that's a flat fee, allowing as many people as who want to attend to attend, that's a great benefit and a great selling point for us from a marketing standpoint. It also gives the organizations an opportunity to invite community members in or colleagues from similar-minded organizations to participate at no additional costs. And for our very first conference, which was on volunteer managers, we had a volunteer day, and these are not professionals working in hospices. They are the individuals who are trained, but they're volunteering their time to go and visit with patients and families. We had approximately 5,000 participate in one training event for volunteers, and we, in a an in-person conference, would never achieve that kind of a response. So that's a huge plus. Another benefit is there are no travel costs really associated with our webinar faculty participating. So it really helps the faculty. It helps us in terms of having to perhaps pay for that. And it's much easier to recruit faculty when they don't really have to leave their office, and it's a very little downtime for them. And it's a big plus. A couple of cons that we found that we work around and strategize around, we find that, you know, some faculty might not really know how to engage as much with the audience, how to interact with this virtual conference environment. So we strongly encourage them and work with them to utilize the technology we have available to engage the audience through polling questions, chatting with one another in the chat boxes, posing questions in the Q&A and posting messages on social media. We do a lot of photo sharing, and we encourage everyone to be tweeting about what's going on. So there's a lot of hopefully activity going on beyond what's just happening with someone sitting in front of their computer listening passively. We also, you know, have to work around some of the learners may not have the technology or may not have tested their equipment to ensure that they can have a good experience. So we're constantly putting forth a lot of information about, you know, test your speakers, make sure you have the bandwidth you need to participate. We want them to have a positive experience and not have technical difficulties. So that's one of the things that we just do a lot of communication around to ensure that they will have a good experience. So those are some of the things that we've, you know, struggled with on the con side, but I think the more we do to communicate and work with faculty and participants, we're able to diffuse those.
All right. So some, you know, some disadvantages that you've seen, but they seem addressable, and that's something that you're actively dealing with, which makes sense. I think every format, even the place-based conference, has its pros and cons, as you alluded to when you said sort of every format does have advantages right. and disadvantages. Now, you know, I think technology is a much more integral aspect of a virtual conference than a place-based conference. And I know, Steve, you talked about that you felt like finding that technology was one of the most important essential things that you had to do. So Maureen, maybe you could talk a little bit about what issues and criteria wound up being really important, the deciding factors for you in picking a technology platform, a technology partner.
Like Steve mentioned when he was talking about our educational offerings, that we also provide 24 webinars in a year. This is something that we have done for years and years, you know, providing webinars and, you know, on-demand webcasts. So we have had enormous success doing this for our members, and the technology that the provider of the technology that we used was Compartners. So also knowing that Compartners had the technology that's required to produce a virtual conference, we felt comfortable selecting them due to the trust and success and confidence we already had in them. So they were able to project the webinars like we do, the concurrent session, like webinars, like we currently do in the webinars that we provide, you know, twice a month, and also the success that they have the technology for our plenary speakers to be recorded in our conference room, such that they are projected, you know, in real time for our online participants. So for that reason, you know, we went with Compartners. We still use them since 2012, and you know, they're still our virtual conference provider. Technology wise, they delivered, and we're still happy with them.
Well, great. And so it sounds like for you, there was a big benefit in going with the same platform that you were already using, because members would be familiar with it. And then this the move into virtual conferences allowed you to use even more functionality that technology partner could bring to bear. So, Steve, if we think about an organization that maybe is considering trying a virtual conference, but they haven't yet really tried one, they haven't yet done anything, you know, what recommendations would you have for how they might get started?
Well, I think I would suggest that you start small. Consider it like a virtual conference pilot, just to get your feet wet, and ask a lot of questions of your learners through needs assessment and surveys beforehand, and ensure that you sort of have them on board and have some interest built up. I think that would be key. I would also make sure you have the support of your senior leadership. We found this to be a critical asset. And I would recognize that the planning of a virtual conference is about as time-consuming as planning a live conference. So you have to make sure you have the staff resources to pull it off, including registration resources, IT internally, and of course your entire education team probably will have some hand in it. And I would consider partnering with other organizations as an option. You share the risks and rewards and expand your reach. This is something we've done later in sort of our evolution. We collaborate with other hospice and palliative care organizations. Rather than compete with them, we're collaborating with them. And we found that to be a very positive experience for our field. And finally, as I mentioned, and as everyone, Maureen's mentioned, having that trusted partner to help you with the technology piece is key. So, put a lot of those things in place first, and then do a lot of testing of everything, and, troubleshooting, is sort of part of the game. You just have to sort of be ready for whatever comes your way. And but I think it's something that, with the way the world is today with so much technology, if you're not doing it, you should certainly consider it. But I would, as I said, maybe start small, but I think you'll find it a good experience.
Well, it's interesting around the partnering. Could you talk a little bit more about how you go about partnering with those organizations? I mean, are you, sharing the cost as well as the revenue that's coming in from it? You're sharing some of the responsibilities for finding speakers. And maybe it's varied in along the years or the times that you've tried it, but I would love to just get a few more details around that partnering aspect.
Sure. It really can be all of the above that you just sort of threw out. We are partnering with other membership-based organizations, and we all three, and we're working with two others right now on an upcoming virtual conference. We have really similar constituencies, and we don't want to really compete with one another, so we are sharing the risks. We're doing a revenue share. We have a planning committee that's really representing all three organizations, all of the education leaders, as well as some of the content experts that each of them then identify. So it really allows us to expand our sort of content reach as well, and identify faculty that maybe we, as a single organization sponsoring it, would not have been able to really identify and perhaps persuade to participate. So it's been great to really pull the best from all three organizations. Mm-hmm. And we even though we're holding it perhaps in our office virtually, everyone is participating. We have the ability to include all of our partners as moderators and give them a role and a visible role. And so, and through marketing, I think we're each marketing to our own individual organizations and memberships, and we're really able to expand sort of the portfolios of other organizations too.
Well, that sounds great. So I'd like to shift just a little bit. We've been focused on your virtual conferences, but I want to broaden the scope, and I'd like to hear from both of you on what's going on in learning these days that excites you. And I'm thinking this could be something that you're doing at NHPCO, or you are thinking about doing at NHPCO, or it could just be something that excites you as an individual lifelong learner. So Maureen, would you start us off? What's exciting to you about learning these days?
First, technology is just rapidly changing. It's hard to keep up. Not long ago, we're talking about computer-based training, and then it's e-learning, and then it's m-learning. There's just too much going on in the learning space. But the area that really excites me, I would like to talk about, is that of micro-learning, which refers to micro perspectives in the context of learning, education, and training. From what I'm seeing these days, people don't really have time to sit down and take a training that lasts hours. People prefer to absorb information in bite size, in chunks. So learning in small chunks or topics versus the whole project, and I find micro-learning fun because it can also be done on the go, which means that you can receive smaller lessons that help you advance towards your educational goal, even where you're when you're commuting or you're on the train or in the restaurant. So while micro-learning is exciting, interesting to me. I'm curious, you know, how microlearning can count towards continuing education in the association industry. For example, how a nurse can obtain continuing education credit, say 0.20 CE for a 10-minute training from attending a conference some conferences last year, and even as a member of learning and development organizations. Many associations are not taking advantage of learning microlearning because they're still trying to figure out the continuing education component. So this is something that I look forward to see being implemented in organization. I'm also excited about the area of virtual reality, creating virtual reality games in education. So these two things, I'd like to see them implemented in our organization. It's not being done, not yet, but hopefully in the near future.
All right, so you're keeping your eye on M-learning and VR. Steve, how about you? What's exciting you in terms of learning these days?
Well, I would just really echo what Maureen just said. I mean, technology is providing so many options to reach our learners. It's so hard to keep up, and things change so quickly. That keeps us on our toes, and, you know, fortunately for NHPCO, we have Maureen to keep us on our toes because she's always pushing the envelope. So, you know, I think we're just trying to translate a lot of this new opportunities to faculty and to our learners about how to access them. And so that really puts us into, you know, sort of that we're bringing them to bringing the horse to water, you know. It's we're really trying to take something new and share it with perhaps neophytes when it comes to technology with some of our learners. So it really provides a lot of opportunities.
Well, great. So next to last question, and this is one that we ask everyone that we interview for the Leading Learning Podcast, and it's a question about how you approach your own lifelong learning. Again, I want to hear from both of you, but Steve, will you start us off this time?
Sure. Well, I think in addition to participating in live and virtual conferences, you know, just really based on what's available from some of the associations and memberships that I belong to, I'm a big believer in mentoring, whether that's formal or informal mentoring, in person or virtual. I think there are so many experienced professionals in any field that want to give back, and I think tapping into that is very important. And throughout my career, I've always sought out mentors for new ideas, different perspectives to help me with my professional growth. And I think, you know, everyone should really seek out within their organization, or perhaps with, you know, organizations that have nothing to do with what your business line might be, just because it provides a different way to enrich your professional and your personal life. So that's really one of the keys for me, is looking for mentoring.
Okay. And Maureen, how about you? How do you approach your lifelong learning?
I totally agree with Steve. Last year, I participated in a mentor program with the Association of Training and Development, where it was like a year program where we had the opportunity to exchange ideas. It was great. You know, just learning and giving back, I think, is key. I also approach lifelong learning by making sure that I'm constantly in the loop of lifelong learning discussions. As a member of many learning and development organizations, I participate in webinars, webcasts, conferences, mentor programs, like Steve mentioned, educational programs in general, just to advance my professional life as a lifelong learner. You just can't stop. We just have to keep learning.
Yeah, like you said, it's so hard to keep up as the pace of technology increases and the pace of change. So,
that's right.
Great. So the last question, just if listeners would like to know more about NHPCO or what you guys are doing, where would you have them go? And Steve, I'll throw that question to you.
I would encourage you to visit the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization's website. We are at www.nhpco.org, and you can learn more about our organization, about hospice and palliative care, a lot of resources, a lot of free resources. And in addition, under the education tab on the homepage, you can find information about our upcoming virtual conference, which is this July. And by just sort of taking a look at what we're offering and how we're positioning the virtual conference, you might get some ideas that you can use on your with your virtual conference. And if you'd like to reach either myself or Maureen, please feel free to email us at education@nhpco.org. And we really appreciate the opportunity to have this chat with you.
Well, thanks so much, Steve. And thank you to Maureen. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So that wraps up our interview with Maureen Quindy and Steve Gardner. As we're exiting, we want to say thanks once again to Castle, a full-service certification and licensure testing company that also offers its clients a variety of learning solutions capabilities. You can find out more about Castle's custom learning solutions by going to leadinglearning.com/castle.
To get show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode89. And while you're there, you will see a variety of options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you aren't already subscribed, and if you are getting value out of the podcast, we'd be truly grateful if you would subscribe.
We'd also be truly grateful if you would take just a minute to give us a rating and review on iTunes. Very easy to do. All you got to do is go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. That'll put you in the right place. And we'd really appreciate it. It'll help us know that you are, in fact, getting value out of the podcast, and it'll make it easier for others to find the podcast.
Finally, we hope that you will consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share, or if tweeting isn't your thing, just pick another social network of your preference and spread the good word that way.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.